Welcome to The Jump. I'm George Sedano. The NBA preseason is upon us, but Kyrie Irving's availability in Brooklyn is still in doubt. How will the new guidelines for unvaccinated players change Kyrie's outlook? Meanwhile, the Nets beat the Lakers so decisively on Sunday that AD is questioning where his team is at already. And we'll go through the best images of the NBA season with historic NBA photographer Andrew Bernstein. Plus, after Brady's successful return to New England, what will be the most anticipated NBA reunion this coming season? No case of the Mondays here. The Jump starts right now. Hey, what's up, people in the studio with me? How about that?
Here and here and
here. We're joined in studio by ESPN NBA reporter Ramona Shelburne and the undefeated Clinton Yates. Thank you guys for hanging out, of course.
Yeah.
And yes, there was actual NBA basketball on Sunday. Without Russ and LeBron, the Lakers took on the Nets without KD, Harden, and Kyrie. The Nets won easily, but the focus stayed on what Kyrie's availability could be when Brooklyn's season begins in a couple of weeks. Steve Nash told reporters post-game he had no update on Kyrie's status playing in the preseason and beyond to this point. So today, Tim Bontemps and Bobby Marks report that the NBA and NBA Players Association agreed to a salary reduction for games missed in cities with vaccine mandates, which currently include New York and San Francisco. According to their sources, players will lose just over 1% of their salary for each game missed. For Kyrie Irving, that would mean nearly $381,000 per game if he misses a home game. Ramona, will this agreement with the NBAPA alter Kyrie's outlook?
Well, it altered Andrew Wiggins' outlook. I mean, I don't know what it means for Kyrie. That'll be up to him. I think with all the players that we've heard from so far, he seems fairly entrenched in his position. And it was interesting, George. Like, I was at the game yesterday, and you saw the Nets all practicing together in San Diego all week. They had a really nice training camp. Everybody talked about how hard it was, how fun it was to play all of them together. They were sick of playing each other by the end of the week because they were just going against each other all the time. But Kyrie could have played in that game yesterday because it was in Los Angeles. There's not the same mandate here in Los Angeles. And because he's not going to practice when they go back to Brooklyn or play when they go back to Brooklyn, it's almost like you have the Kyrie on games and the Kyrie off games. Mm-hmm. Yesterday would have been a good opportunity to put him out there, but Steve Nash essentially said, yeah, that was never consideration. We weren't playing James Harden or Kevin Durant or Kyrie in this game. And it was interesting because I think they have a pretty good idea of how they want to play. They have a pretty good idea of what this team is going to look like. The question is it going to look like that for half the season? Or will it look like that for all of this season?
Yeah. Clinton, what do you make of all this?
I'm sorry. I can't take seriously the notion that Kyrie Irving just might miss half the game because he's not going to get vaccinated. I mean, to me, that on a leadership level is kind of unconscionable when you think about what it is this team is trying to do. They've got a real shot to win an NBA title. And to think that he's going to be so dug in on his stance like this, it's hard to understand because, listen, we can argue back and forth about the safety measures, but the bottom line is that if you're not vaccinated, you can't play basketball. You know what I mean? And I think from just a player hooper standpoint, I think he's eventually going to give in. I think there's an outside chance that maybe he is vaccinated and he's just trying to make some larger point to the media about privacy and so on and so forth. But if I'm a Nets fan, this is devastating. We're coming up on the season now, and guys aren't even playing ball because of things that are unrelated on some levels. Hate to see it.
You know, and right now, George, it's LA and it's San Francisco and New York, but the expectation around the league is that that kind of mandate could go into other markets as well throughout this year. So we're talking about how, and I mean, it's a funny irony. It's not funny for the teams or the players involved, but theoretically, Kyrie could play when they go through San Francisco because he'd be a visiting player, but not in Brooklyn, okay? Because it only affects the home players. But I think the expectation is that that is going to be more of the norm as this season goes on. And so we're talking about half the home games because he plays in New York and there's a government mandate there, but that could expand.
Yeah.
How do his teammates feel about this? Do we have any sense or the coaching staff or the organization?
Look, when Steve Nash answered that question, it was less than 3 seconds. I don't want to talk about this. I don't have anything there for you on it. They don't want this to become a distraction, even though it is. You could not want somebody to be a distraction, and it's a distraction. But they're doing their best to just move along and play the way they're going to have to play, regardless of whether he's there or not. But I really got the sense when they were down in San Diego, they went to Joe Tsai, the owner of the team. He has a house down in La Jolla. They went and had a team bonding experience. Right. They've got to do things as a team this year because the rules are so much more relaxed in terms of COVID protocols mm-hmm. that nobody got to do last year. And I think they have been able to build a sense of camaraderie, even despite Kyrie not being able to play at home or practice at home.
I would say it's a little bit more than a distraction at this point. You know what I'm saying? It's a legitimate availability thing that affects whether or not this team is going to be able to win going forward. I think distraction is a massive understatement.
Let's move forward here. After an opening week of camp where Andrew Wiggins explained his reasoning to not be vaccinated, Steve Kerr confirmed Sunday that Wiggins is now vaccinated and expects to be clear to play home games once the season starts in San Francisco. Golden State's home opener is against the Clippers, October 21st on ESPN here. And Clinton, is this a matter of money overcoming concerns for Wiggins? What do you make of it?
I think this is a guy who just kind of grew up on this one. You know, we saw a couple different things in terms of him coming out in the public and stating his thoughts on what was going to happen. And then he tried to sort of sneak that religious exemption by and got roundly mocked by a lot of people in public. And then came to a decision that, once again, I think was a basketball one. When you saw what Kerr said, he just said, listen, I don't want to talk about this anymore. You know what I mean? Just like Steve Nash. It's like, can we get this over with? But again, the power of pressure in certain matters, and in this case, public health, I think really affected him. You know, he's a guy that was an everyday player for him, a durable guy. But when you come out there and try to act like that, and then everybody says, listen, man, this is not what you're going to do. This doesn't make sense. Change his mind, and I think it's a healthier decision. I hope that works out for the Warriors.
You know, George, in the NFL, they reframe the issue of vaccination as availability and accountability to mm-hmm. your teammates. And I think when I heard Wiggins talk last week, and he said it was my decision or my problem, not yours, and it felt like it was very personal for him in the sense that he didn't want to do something he didn't want to do. But if you reframe that, and I think that's how his Warriors teammates were talking about it, is we need you, man.
Right.
We need you out there. And are you available to us or not? And I think the more the NBA goes in this direction, the more you'll see some of, you saw even last week, it went from 90% of players who had got at least their first shot to 95.
Right, Woj reported that.
Yeah. There's going to be that triple.
95% of players have been
vaccinated. Yeah, at least the first shot. Not fully vaccinated, but at least the first shot. And it's going in that direction. And look, there's a nice way to do it where you incentivize people. Like they're not testing every day. If you're vaccinated, you don't have to test every day.
Yeah.
You can go out on the road. You can see people. You can do things. You can kind of almost get back to normal. But if you are vaccinated, they make it really uncomfortable for you. And so it's that's how the NBA has set this up. But in these two markets, New York and San Francisco, you lose money.
Yeah.
That gets your attention.
Yeah, that would change things for sure. And it has, perhaps, with Andrew Wiggins. So, all right, back to Sunday's game where LeBron and Russ didn't play. Anthony Davis did for 11 minutes.
Yeah.
But the Lakers gave up 123 points to the Nets without any of their top stars. And afterwards, AD was not pleased with the Lakers' performance.
Oh, we're way behind. Getting movement on offense, quality shots, defensively, talking, getting our schemes right, rebounding, very huge. We're not boxing out. And that was the main takeaway, just, offense to come, we're not really too worried about it, especially when we get Brian Mello, T.A., Russ out there. But it was just our first game to see where we are, and we had to do a better job defensively, especially blocking out.
So, Ramona, do you share AD's concern after Lakers preseason game number one?
No. What's he talking? They're fine. Like, he's the only guy who played even a little.
Yeah.
Only of the regulars. I actually thought they looked okay. I thought Malik Monk looked really good the other day.
Sure.
But I actually think it's a good sign that Anthony Davis is saying those words.
Bingo.
Because he's got a sense of urgency. And it reminds, I've said this before, it's almost like if you close your eyes, last year didn't happen.
Yeah.
Like, the Lakers are back to that 2020 team that won the championship where they're fired up, they're hungry, they're not coming off that really short layoff. I was talking to a coach yesterday in the Lakers where they said, that short layoff after the bubble, they were fried. And I think that team did not have the same spirit and hunger that they did in 2020. This year, they have the vets who are coming back are hungry because they didn't win last year and they had a nice long break. And then guys like Russ, Carmelo, DeAndre Jordan, they haven't won. And they have the hunger of veterans who are here to win a ring. And so they really have a good spirit to them. Anthony Davis is right in that they look behind. But look at the schedule coming up for the Lakers, okay, George? Their first 10 games, I went through to look at the schedule, and that looks like a team that could easily start 9-1, 8-2. Mm-hmm. Look at the schedule.
Yeah.
Okay, the first three games, those are tough games. So let's say they go 2-1 in those three.
Yeah.
Look at that strip.
A lot of winnable games. Cavs, Rockets.
That should be 5 wins right there.
Yeah.
That game against the Trailblazers, that'll be a tough one.
Yeah.
But they have a really easy opening schedule in terms of win percentage last season. And it's always like that for teams that are going to be on in the backloaded schedule after the Super Bowl.
Tons of ABC
Lakers,
games.
Warriors,
right.
Yeah,
right. Televised
ABC,
games.
Yeah. So this early part of the schedule for a team that doesn't have a lot of returners, that has a lot of new guys, like, this is a great way to start.
Speaking of new guys, a lot of new guys, I believe 11 new players on this particular roster, Clinton. What do you make of the fit?
I'd like to see them play a little in the preseason. I mean, honestly, you know, I understand that the schedule is soft and so on and so forth, but we still don't really know, and it's a little confusing. AD says nothing's going right. LeBron says the practices have been better than ever. So how about we get a product together on the court so we can at least have an idea of what the big three is going to be or plus one is going to be. And look, I'm not really certain that that'll happen in the preseason, but I'd like to see it happen once. Give me a quarter. Give me a half. You know what I mean?
Well, I think it will.
I mean, how much are we going to see? Yeah. I'm wondering because, you know, if AD's saying this now and LeBron's saying this then, I'm as excited as I've been to see this Laker team in a long time because of exactly what you said. They seem to be aligning.
I would expect, and Ramona, you tell me because you've covered this team a lot longer than I have, like, I expect them to probably play couple of games, 2 or 3 games together, a few minutes here and there, and then that last one, everyone will basically take off again. But those last, I guess those 3 or 4 last games, they'll play 2 or 3 of those.
Look, I don't think AD and LeBron or Russ, they don't all need to play together in the preseason games. They play plenty in practices. What the Lakers are trying to get out of this preseason is to see which one of the role players that they signed. Kendrick Nunn, Wayne Ellington, Halen Horton-Tucker. I mean, well, he's not paid like a role player. Okay,
he's going to be good.
Big player for that. They want to see which of those guys is shining. They want to get a feel for those guys. And you saw some big minutes for DeAndre Jordan, for Dwight Howard yesterday. They're putting the rest of the team out there to see what they have in a lot of the new guys. And so LeBron, AD, it's nice that AD played a quarter. He doesn't need to.
After that,
fine.
We'll see. We'll see.
They're fine.
No big deal. All right. We'll see. There's plenty of preseason action still to come and much more to come here on the show as well. Coming up, the top 2 seeds in the WNBA playoffs are both on the brink of missing the finals. Which team should be more concerned? We'll discuss that. But first, it's time for our first distant replay from this date in 2017 featuring Julius Randle.
Love these.
Julius Randle, the Laker.
Larry Nance, man, this is like...
Who's the baby Lakers, pre-LeBron.
So many years
left hand bang, too.
He always had ups, though.
It was quite a Laker debut for the third time for Dwight Howard. He played 13 minutes, fouled out, picked up a flagrant and a technical. That's a full day's work. Ramona, expect Dwight to be the enforcer for the Lakers this season.
Yeah, that's kind of his role. That's Dwight. Like, you got 6 fouls, use him, big guy. Afterwards, he was laughing about it because he was like, you know, I'm so strong. I forget how strong I am. Okay.
I mean, I don't know that I would call him an enforcer. Agitator is probably a better word.
Instigator.
Yeah. Instigator. He's like, he reminds me of like Pat Bev in A Big Man's Body.
You know what I'm saying?
Like, so he's also still a little too nice and a little too goofy for me to look at him as a guy that's an enforcer. And he's also a little too skilled for that. I think they're going to need him a little bit more than just be fouling out.
It was a funny moment, though. Yeah. He fouled out of the game, but he had already taken a free throw and made it. So this is Dwight Howard, who's always had issues with free throws. Yeah. He makes a free throw, and they took it away from him. The poor guy, DeAndre Jordan, went over and gave him a hug afterwards. Like, man.
It's weird. But
you make one?
He's a fun guy.
Got to keep him as many. Got to give that man as many as he can get. You know, we can't be taking him away.
It's practice.
Come on.
Happy you could be with us once again for our NHL coverage.
It could not be louder.
I'm fired up to skate right now. All right, speaking of being fired up, the Connecticut Sun and Las Vegas Aces started the WNBA playoffs as the 1 and 2 seeds, respectively. Now, they're both on the brink of elimination, down 2-1. Puts both franchises on the verge of upset alert in these best-of-5 semifinals. Ramona, given how the series have gone, which franchise's upset alert is ringing a little bit louder at the moment?
Probably Las Vegas. I mean, these games with the Aces have not been as close. I think the Mercury have been really good in these games. But Chicago's a 6 seed here. I mean, this is both the underdogs in these series are quote-unquote underdogs in terms of seedings.
Yeah.
Easily could be the number one and two teams if they would have not had injuries throughout the year. I mean, Candace Parker missed a significant portion of the year earlier with injuries, and Diana Taurasi obviously has missed some time with injuries, and so they're getting healthy at the right time. They also have a lot of momentum. Look at that defensive efficiency for the Aces, though. That's awful. They were one of the better defensive teams in the league. In the playoff, 120 points a game defensive efficiency.
Wild.
Yeah. That's a terrible defense, and that's something you can control.
Yeah, Scott figured it out late, and so with the amount of talent in this team, I mean, that sixth seed is a bit of a misnomer. You know what I mean? Like, anybody can beat anybody, so I think it's the Aces as well. It feels like a bigger upset if that squad goes down than it does otherwise.
They were also in the WNBA. They were in the finals last year.
Correct, for sure. All right, now that the games haven't been the only news in the WNBA, travel issues have continued to plague teams during this postseason run. So players have had scheduled layovers and have had even to take separate flights with their teammates in order to avoid middle seats when traveling and whatnot. So, Ramona, why does this continue to happen to the best women playing basketball in the world?
Every time I hear this, I get upset. And I understand why it happens, because there are some owners in the WNBA who can afford to fly their team's charter, and there are some owners who cannot, and so therefore everyone must not. Because it's a competitive disadvantage for the owners who can't spring for that. Mm-hmm. But I think from a league perspective, at least in the playoffs, they've got to try to get them new charter flights or first-class air. These games are being played every other day. The Chicago Sky and Phoenix Mercury, they have played every other day for the first three rounds of the playoffs. That's a lot. And Joe Tsai, the owner of the New York Liberty, and the Brooklyn Nets, by the way, he's kind of made it his mission. I mean, he can certainly afford to send the Liberty on. He can send the Liberty on a private jet, but the other owners in the league can't. And so, therefore, he's come up with a really good idea. Working with Commissioner Engelbert to find a charter sponsor, conversations with airline CEOs are going well. They get the idea of equity for women athletes. I mean, this feels like a win-win. And George, to me, this feels a lot like in the NCAA tournament when you saw the video of the Oregon players showing the weight room and all the disparity.
Yeah.
They had to go at 3:30 in the morning to take separate flights from three different airports in between playoff games so they could fly and not sit in a middle seat. That's rough.
It's beyond embarrassing. It's shameful, you know, and I think that, look, it's nice that he wants to make some sort of, you know, duality partnership or whatever, but how about it's a requirement that you can afford to fly your team charter in order to own a team in the WNBA? I mean, I don't know where we're sort of acting as if this always has to be some kind of a volunteer effort from everybody. Spend the money on your players for the sake of the league. That, to me, is what's most important here. That it seems that if two teams, one can't fly charter and the other can't, you find a way to make sure the other team can fly charter. You don't downgrade back to make sure that they're both on the same end. I'm with you. It's uncomfortable to even think about. You know what I mean? When you think about where these athletes come from a college standpoint, where they're flying charter everywhere, and then they get to the professional league. Not necessarily, but many are.
But the ones of the big programs.
The ones of the big programs are. And it's just the disparity is so, again, it's almost hard to think about. Like, what are we doing here?
Well, spend the money. Here's the thing. It depends on if you're making money. And a lot of WNBA franchises are not profitable right now. And this is just the state of the league. And it's something that you need to be honest about it.
Yeah.
We all want these things, but who's going to pay for it? Okay. And the owners the owners in this league, they're in it for the right reasons, I think. And so it's hard when you're already losing money on a franchise to say, we're going to play for charter. But I think at least during the playoffs, something that should not influence this. Because I already have issues with the single elimination in two separate rounds, the extra games, the travel across. I mean, that's rough.
I do want to double back to something Clinton said, which is, when other leagues vet their owners, they have to have a certain amount of income to be able to run the team a certain way. And I do think that needs to be something that needs to be addressed, perhaps moving forward, right? Where these people have enough equity, right, liquidity, to be able to afford these things, so that way the athletes don't have to suffer.
It's not a luxury. We're not talking about milkshakes and towels like we used to talk to with Mark Cuban. We're talking about an operational cost that affects the health and the competition of the actual players. This is a no-brainer to me in terms of making sure that this can be something that you can do. It's not a luxury. It matters in terms of the product on the court.
All right. Time to give some flowers away to the Suns and Lakers organization.
Yeah.
As they agreed to play their preseason game earlier to help make sure that the court would be ready for the Aces-Mercury game on Wednesday. So shout out to both of those NBA organizations. All right, Clint, thanks for hanging out today, Bruce.
Yeah, man, it's great to see you.
Great to see you. In person.
I know, right? I'm channeling fall with my sweater, but it's like 80 degrees out.
It really is.
I mean, it's fall almost
every
day.
It's LA.
So there you go. All right, Wednesday's game four in the best of five WNBA playoff semifinals. Sun Sky get it started 8 Eastern, 5 Pacific. Then the Aces look to force a game five against the Mercury. Both games are on ESPN and the app. One app, one tap. Coming up, if a picture's worth a thousand words, we run the gamut next. From the Lakers' rings to the Bucks taking the title, we go inside the images that define the memorable 2021 season. That's coming up next here on The Jump.
This is one game away from being NBA champ, being in the history of this game, being always there.
The spin move, the finish!
Giannis Antetokounmpo with one of the most iconic performances in the storied history of the NBA Finals.
And the slam from Antetokounmpo!
The long wait has ended after a half century. The Milwaukee Bucks are NBA champions once again.
I'm at the top.
I wanted to do it here in the city. I wanted to do it with these guys. Did it.
Welcome back to The Jump. As the preseason begins and gets ready to get into full swing this week, we wanted to take a look back on the year that was as we welcome in senior NBA photographer Andrew Bernstein. Andrew, thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, George, thanks so much. Glad to be here with you.
Yeah, listen, you document it all, so let's go on this journey of last year here together. Let's start last December 22nd when the Lakers had their ring night in an empty arena on opening night. Andrew, what was the environment like being there in person?
Well, it was a fitting conclusion to the bubble experience, I got to tell you, which, you know, it ended only a couple of months before that. I personally had spent 53 days in the bubble and witnessed probably the most surreal thing I'd ever seen. You know, the Lakers winning a championship in front of nobody with confetti falling.
Yeah.
And then they're getting their rings essentially in front of the same group of nobody. You know, these guys played hard in the bubble. They earned the ring. It's too bad they couldn't get the adulation of the crowd and unveil their banner and do a parade and all that stuff. But when it comes down to it, a ring is a ring.
Oh, yeah. I don't think anyone's chalking it up any other way. I don't think there's any question about that. That one is right. Going down as a trophy and a championship and a Larry O'Brien and all those rings that all those guys got. All right, next, on to June 30th. Chris Paul finally makes his first finals as the Suns eliminate the Clippers. There's an incredible shot you had of CP3 hugging Coach Monty Williams. What do you remember from that scene?
Well, I saw that unfold when Monty took Chris out of the game at the end, and it was just an outpouring of emotion and love. And, you know, here are two guys who were together. You know, Monty coached Chris as a rookie, and 16 years later, you know, they get to the promised land together. Not unlike Michael Jordan's emotional outburst when he won his first championship in 91, just letting it go. But there's true love between those two. And I was just glad that the seas parted because there are a lot of people in the way. I was on the other end of the court when I shot that. So luckily I was able to bang out a couple of frames.
Yeah. And again, it was just what a great moment for Chris Paul, who's dealt with plenty of heartbreak. And I'm sure you've captured those unfortunate moments on the court as well. But He got that opportunity to play in the finals, which is awesome. So 2 weeks later, this happened in game four.
With Tucker on him, throws it up for Ayton. Shot blocked by Antetokounmpo. What a block from Giannis.
One of the greatest blocks in NBA history as Giannis denied Ayton's alley-oop. How did you get that shot from the basket area?
Well, George, I do a group of remote cameras that are set up on the opposite end of the court from where I'm sitting. So this happens to be one of maybe seven remotes I had set up. The camera is embedded into the stanchion pad. There's a hole cut out at the bottom and the camera is inserted there with a wide angle lens. And so this moment is captured from, you know, seven different angles. I'm pushing a button literally on the other side of the court. I mean, if you blew up that photo, you would see me on the other end of the court. And, you know, it was a bang, bang play, as you just saw in the video. I was really lucky. Honestly, luck was with me that day because I timed it, I think, perfectly. But that doesn't always happen. But I was super thankful to get this moment in game four.
Well, listen, I mean, maybe luck played a role in it, but you're pretty awesome at what you do, okay? Which is why every year you come on this show and why every year there's so many great photographs of the NBA. All right, let's move on to game six. The Bucks win their first title in 50 years. What moments did you find during that particular celebration that stood out?
Wow, what an incredible moment. I mean, you know, Giannis's story is just a whole other episode, you know. I mean, what an incredible life's journey he's had. And he's such a humble, genuine guy. I mean, I wish I'd spend more time around him. I hope I do the rest of my career and his career. But to see, you know, the city of Milwaukee, you know, finally win after 50 years, you know, Kareem and Oscar are sitting courtside, and there's a lot of, you know, a lot of history, a lot of threads there, and Coach Bud, and you know, it's a wonderful organization, a great city, a city I hadn't spent a lot of time in, quite frankly, throughout my career, but it was beautiful. It was really beautiful, a beautiful moment and well-deserved. I mean, it was a heck of a finals. And I guess the better team won. But, man, that was some battle between the two of them.
Yeah, absolutely a battle. And Giannis gets to stake his claim to the crown, right? As he mentioned earlier in the video we mentioned or we showed earlier, you know, he's part of the history now forever. Last one. Just a couple of weeks ago, you were at the Clippers groundbreaking for their new arena in Inglewood. What do you think the new Intuit Arena will mean for the Clippers?
Well, that was incredible. I mean, I have to preface this answer by saying I'm the last remaining person associated with the Clippers who was there on opening night in 1984. Wow. After Ralph Lawler retired, it left me as the last standing person. So this will be the third arena, God willing, knock on wood, that I'll work in, that the Clippers will play in, you know, Sports Arena, Staples Center, now the Intuit Dome. I think it's great. I mean, Steve Ballmer has a vision. The city of Inglewood is going to benefit. You know, the fans are going to have an arena that's dedicated just to their team. They don't have to share it with anybody. And, you know, it was a great, exciting time. I mean, anytime you put Steve Ballmer with a microphone, you can have some, you know, moments. And that was truly a great event.
I'm sure it'll be a beautiful backdrop as well for new photographs for you moving forward once that thing gets built. Is there any date you have circled on your calendar for this upcoming season?
Well, anytime the Lakers play the Clippers in Staples Center, that's definitely circled on my calendar. Also, you know, I'm really looking forward, I'm sure like you and everyone else, to when the NBA unveils the NBA 75. I mean, yes. You know, there's a lot of speculation is going to be on that list. That's going to be coming up soon. So that's going to be pretty amazing. And, you know, I'm just so happy to have the season back. I was at a game yesterday, preseason game, and, you know, it's almost normal, you know, yeah. So that's pretty cool. And, you know, let's get a great season in here because we all deserve it.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, thank you, Andrew, so much for joining us. Continued success. You do such unbelievable work. We can't wait to see even more of it. And hopefully I'll see you soon at an arena as well.
George, thanks so much. Take care, man.
You got it. Take care. Coming up, Tom Brady played a road game against the Patriots last night. Perhaps you heard. Crazy, right? So which NBA return games are you most looking forward to seeing? We'll give you our list and discuss after the break here on The Jump. We welcome in Brian Windhorst here in a moment, but Dame Lillard already in logo Lillard form from training camp. Look at all these 30-footers. All right, Brian. Expecting a big year from Dame Dalla, what?
Well, you know, look, since we've last seen Dame, he's won a gold medal, he got married, and he released the most recent Dame Dalla album. He's in a really happy place right now. The question is he going to be in a happy place in January? That's the question I have, but today everything's great.
You know, I try not to take greatness for granted in the NBA, especially when we do this every day, but when you see guys making a shot from the logo, like, it's become so routine for him and Steph Curry to just do that, but
like
that's amazing. He can make them from there all the time.
Not just a shot from the logo. Yeah. Multiple shots.
Yeah, when he says he practices that, he really does.
He's pretty good, that Damon. Huh? fifth winner-take-all game between the Yankees and Red Sox in their storied history. It's a crazy rivalry. All right. Speaking of Boston, it wasn't pretty, but Tom Brady returned to Foxborough to lead the Buccaneers to come from behind against the Patriots. Even a brief hug got us thinking here.
Real brief.
Take a listen. Nah. But it got us thinking about Blake Griffin and a bunch of these guys who will be coming back. His return game in Detroit November 5th as a member of the Nets, played there last year, but less than 1,000 fans. James Harden scheduled back in Houston with a full capacity. So, look, he won MVP in Houston, six-time first-team All-NBA there, and second leading scorer in franchise history. Then KD will play in San Francisco for the first time in front of fans on January 29th. He was a two-time champ in the Bay, two-time Finals MVP, three-time All-NBA selection. And Kyle Lowry, Mr. Raptor, returns to Toronto on February 3rd. He's a champion and a six-time All-Star and the franchise leader in assists. And lastly, Ben Simmons, we don't have a return date for you, but his future in Philly is unsure at best at this point. He's a three-time All-Star, former Rookie of the Year, and made first-team All-Defense twice. So here it is, all in writing, a lot of dates to circle on your calendar. Brian, which one jumps out to you?
Well, I personally only care about the Kyle Lowry game because that's going to be a celebratory moment where he's going to be cheered loudly. By the way, Danny Green is making his return to Toronto tonight for the first time since winning the title.
That's right.
And he's still not getting his ring. Still not getting his ring tonight.
Oh, my gosh.
I've never seen anything like it. Sorry, I hijacked this segment. I just thought I should bring that out. But another event in Toronto I'm looking forward to, Kyle Lowry.
Yeah, will they have the statue ready for him by then? By the time it's a little quick for a bronze, but he'll get cheered. I actually think James Harden is going to get cheered too, and I think Kevin Durant will be cheered. Those two, like James Harden, he had an incredible career for the Rockets. It didn't end well, but he's Mr. Hughes. He did so much for them.
You think he's going to get cheered?
I don't think
he's going to get cheered.
I do. Look, they got Jalen Green now. Everybody's happy.
So.
Look, it was a messy exit, but I think people will forgive and forget.
By that time, they're going to be 30 games under 500.
True.
They're not going to be happy.
Yeah, I'm with Brian.
But the real answer to your question, George, the real answer is whatever Ben Simmons' return game is.
Okay, speaking of which,
because that is going to be.
You've got some information on that, right?
Yeah, look, we're all watching to see is Ben going to show. Okay, this is the first game that the Sixers are playing without him. It's a preseason game, but you still get Doc money if he doesn't show up. He's being fined for not showing up. Brian reported over the weekend his first check didn't go through, but. You know, from what I understand, like, this was never about the money. He's still status quo right now. Now, we're going to have to keep checking in on this. We'll check in next week and every game that he misses, because each game is going to be money that comes out of the check. But when and if Ben gets traded and he eventually returns to Philadelphia, I do not expect that to be kind. And I think that speaks to the larger point of, you know, from Ben's side, if he doesn't show up in Philly, or if he ended up, you know, at some point showing up and making things uncomfortable there, what kind of Ben Simmons would even show up? At that point, like, things are so toxic there.
Wait, but do you think that's a possibility that he could still show up?
It depends on how long this goes, right, Brian? We've seen standoffs before.
Yeah, I think we actually have to look at the NFL because this is a situation that is not really we see in the NBA very often. When guys haven't shown, it's because they haven't signed. We don't see guys under contract not show up. So in the NFL, what they have been doing recently is holding in, where they show up and basically don't play. And I think if hindsight is 20/20 here, that's what Ben Simmons should have done. He should have arrived in Philadelphia, sat on the bench and said, I am just not going to play. I've got a sore back, or kind of do what John Wall is doing, which even though it's an agreement with the team, he's essentially sidelined until they can trade him. By holding out, it creates this whole series of unanticipated and unprecedented moments like this money that was due him. And the Sixers took a NFL-like approach to it, which is they put the money that they owed him, $8 million, they put it in escrow instead of giving it to him so they could chip the fines off as they go along. Had they waited until he got the actual fine money to be a high number, he would have had IOUs due to the Sixers. This way, they can actually take the actual money away from him with the intent of never giving it back. That is what they do in the NFL. So this is turning into an NFL style holdout. And by the way, that is not a direction the NBA wants to go in, because it obviously creates a lot of problems and renegotiations in the NFL they don't have in the NBA.
Ramona, obviously this will put a lot on Joel Embiid's shoulders, which pretty big shoulders, right? Pretty broad shoulders.
Yep.
But is there another gear, I guess, for Joel in this particular situation?
He thinks so. I mean, he's going into this season thinking he's added moves to his game. There's going to be no doubt of where the offense is running through. He's going to take more shots per game than he probably ever has. That's his goal, at least. And I think that he sets up, and we had those MVP odds. If Ben Simmons does not play for the Sixers this year, I think you really have to look at Joel Embiid. He was the runner-up last year. And if he can play enough games, he should be in there, and especially if they play well. They're really high on Tyrese Maxey. Really like him in that spot. Yeah. And they're very high on this. And in a lot of ways, that lineup right there is geared more towards Embiid's skill set than when they have to do the making room for each other with Ben Simmons.
And, Brian, with Tobias Harris, I mean, he's another max player. Like, we don't even talk about him. But he's certainly someone that can elevate his game at this point, right?
Yeah, it's definitely an opportunity for Tobias. He thought he should have been an all-star last year. He wasn't really that close to making it, but that door is open. But here's the thing. They're taking away one of the top three or four defensive players in the league off of their roster. They are not going to just not feel that.
Yep.
They're going to feel it. They were the number one seed in the East last year, bona fide championship contender. You don't lose a guy like Ben Simmons and all of a sudden are still in the same spot. I do agree with Ramona. I mean, I was somebody who was beating the drum for Embiid to be MVP last year, but he missed so many games that it became very hard to vote for him. But that's the thing with Embiid. He misses games. He got hurt then in the playoffs. If he's not missing games, he's playing through injuries. So, you know, it's one thing to have a team like they had last year. It's another thing to not have Ben Simmons and then knowing that Embiid's going to miss a significant percentage of games. I just don't think they're the same team without him. And that's why it's a conundrum for Philly, because they can't just trade him for nothing. They've got to trade him for players or player that can keep that same level. And it is not an easy level to maintain because, you know, Ben Simmons is a very good player.
All right, we'll keep an eye on it, certainly. Up next, Zion says he's done missing the playoffs. What can the Pelicans do about that this particular season? We'll break it all down after the break. But first, time for our second distant replay of the day. This one from this date in 2016 featuring Draymond Green.
Warriors are 8 of 12. The Clippers are 2 of 12 on the floor.
Ooh.
Great defense there by Draymond Green. Runner-up for defense.
Dave Pasch on the call, by the way.
The last two.
Oh, hello.
Draymond, I did not know he could.
Oh.
That was almost a free throw line dunk. Almost.
Coast they should run this in a loop in
Let's
the
see.
Facility.
One step. Did not know he could do that.
Almost coast
Draymond,
to coast, too.
Well, at one time was a great offensive player. Good.
Thursday on ESPN2, it's NBA preseason action between the Miami Heat and the Houston Rockets with number 2 overall pick Jalen Green. 10 Eastern, 7 Pacific. You can also check it out on the ESPN app. It's crunch time here on The Jump. Houston Rockets guard Kevin Porter Jr. revealed that he would be the starting point guard with John Wall sitting out. He also said his goal is to average 10 assists per game this season. Brian, what are your realistic expectations for the Rockets?
Lots and lots and lots of losing. They are geared to lose. They're one of the youngest teams in NBA history. And one of the ways you guarantee losing in the NBA is by having a young backcourt, and they have the youngest.
Look, they are set up to where you want to just find one or two or three young players to build your core around. They're really excited they got Jalen Green. Brian's right. They're going to lose a lot of games. You just hope that doesn't change the culture going forward. But if you can find two or three guys that you feel we can build a team around, that's seasons of success.
Moving on, Lakers guard Malik Monk led the team in scoring with 15 points last night. He was asked about his new nickname. Let's take a listen.
Malik, Dwight told us yesterday that your new nickname is the microwave. How do you feel about that one? And do you feel like that sums up your game?
They call me that, so I take the nickname. I don't give myself nicknames. But yeah, I think it fits well. I think it fits well. Perfect.
His teammate Anthony Davis also said, "We're still surprised we got him, to be honest." Ramona, how much of an impact do you think Malik will have this season?
I mean, Vinnie Johns would like a word. That nickname has been used. but I like it. That's exactly what Malik Monk's going to give them. If he's on, he's going to be a great player for them. He was on last night. or yesterday during the day. It was a 12:30 start. But yeah, I'm surprised that he was available for them and at the price they got him for. But that's why you sign that 1 year deal. So you play for a team that's looking for a championship and hope you make a big impact.
Yeah, look, he was a lottery pick in Charlotte and had high expectations. Mm-hmm. Now he's a bench player, so the expectations are completely different. And he's going to have games where he plays great. I mean, he had moments in Charlotte where it was like, wow, this guy is going to be a star. But those were not that common. So, look, with what they're paying him, if he comes off the bench and has 15 games like that during the regular season, helps the Lakers win 4 or 5 games this way, he will have served his role. And as long as you keep your expectations to that, you'll be happy. If you expect that every night, like the Hornets were when they drafted him so highly, you're probably going to be let down.
If you look back at his career, there are certain games that he had against certain teams that he killed them. Ask Eric Spoelstra how good Malik Monk is. He felt like every time he played against them, it was a 30-point game. But to your point, not as consistent, but that isn't necessarily the role here. Like, if he gets them 30 one night, that's exactly what they asked for. They don't need it consistently like when he was a lottery pick in Charlotte. All right, in an interview with SiriusXM Radio, New Orleans Pelicans star Zion Williamson said he's done missing the playoffs. The Pelicans have missed the postseason in Zion's first two seasons and now have his third new head coach in as many seasons. Zion did, however, make his first All-Star team, averaging career highs in points, rebounds, assists, and field goal percentage. So Ramona, when missing the playoffs for a third straight season, hurt Zion's potential rookie max extension set for this summer?
No.
Yeah, I don't mind.
I think he's going to get it no matter what. It depends on how much he plays. The most I could see there being some lines in there saying if he has catastrophic injuries like we've seen Michael Porter Jr.'s contract or Joel Embiid's rookie contract. But I think Zion has proven enough that he deserves the full max when he's eligible for it. But I do like that quote from him because he's talking about, I'm done missing the playoffs. It's not quite saying this is on me and putting the team and putting that pressure on himself, but it's almost there.
Well, I love Zion. I love his game. I think he's a dominating player. I think he's one of the greatest interior scorers I've ever seen. But he is not putting his best foot forward. Not to make a pun there because he's got a broken foot. If you want to see Zion Williamson, go find his highlights from when he was at Duke. He was, I wouldn't say a dominating defensive player, but he was a defensive playmaker at Duke. He has never been that player in the NBA. He has never had the same athleticism or drive defensively, and the way he gets exploited defensively holds the Pelicans back. I mean, everything he can do offensively, if he wants to be that kind of one-sided player, he'll still probably be a Hall of Famer. But if he wants to be a guy that leads teams into playoffs, leads playoff runs, he's got to go back to the type of player he was at Duke and, frankly, get into the condition he was at Duke. And if you don't believe me, it wasn't that long ago. It wasn't 10 years ago. It was 3 years ago. Go to YouTube and find the highlights that he had at Duke. You will be blown away. Your jaw will drop, especially if you're a Pelicans fan and have watched him the last 2 years.
Yeah, I would agree wholeheartedly. I mean, that's really any young player who wants to take that step. We were having this discussion about Jason Tatum the other day on this show about what he needs to do to take that next step. And I said that, like, guard the best player on the other side too, right? That's part of the equation. He's an amazing young talent, also from Duke, by the way. So I just think that needs to happen kind of across the board. All right, before we go, I want to wish congratulations to producer Steve and his wife Stephanie on the birth of the new baby boy, Ray. Congratulations. Yay. Thanks, Ramona, Brian, and Clinton. And Andrew, the jump is back with Cassidy tomorrow on ESPN.